How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Lakers. I am Anthony Irwin. I am joined, as always, by Harrison Fagan. As always, this is how we start every single show. You can find the show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, on Audio Boom, and on Silver Screen and Roll via article. Again, if you have any questions as to where you can find the show, or if you have another idea for a platform that we should work on, and if you bring up SoundCloud, I will fight you in the streets. Let us know, and we'll try to make that work for you. Harrison, how are you doing? I hope you're doing better than Timofey Mozgov's groin, which we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, I mean, that injury is kind of a little bit of a kick to the groin, I would say. And I did say before you took my little joke from the article and you put it in a tweet, and you're like, oh, let me rack up 500 retweets on this and get on Bleacher Report. And so, you know, you're shameless. You're between like Mozgov's injury and your shameless intellectual theft, I've been better. No, okay. So you didn't steal. I don't think I honestly know that you didn't steal it from that little joke from mm-hmm. me. I just am worried that our minds are going to the same place on this stuff.
We're basically synchronized tweeters.
Yeah, it's like us doing synchronized swimming, which we were talking about before the podcast because both of us were watching it and amazed with the choreography, but. You know, that like that our tweeting is our version of synchronized swimming. I mean, we're kind of on that level on tweeting. Now, if you and me got in a pool, that would just be a disaster.
Like, it wouldn't go well.
Yeah.
Or it would go like really, really well and we'd go viral.
Well, we'd go viral, but it would not be it would not be for good reasons. It would not be because we did well.
All right. So I'll scratch that off the list of things to do for the show.
Yeah, well, hey, we're getting into August. We may have to do a show on synchronized swimming.
You know, it'd be funny is to send one of those tweets like 10,000 RTs and we'll synchronize swim.
Oh, no.
See what happens. All right. So anyway, so basically today's show is pretty straightforward. Timofey Mozgov gets hurt and the Lakers are now, you know, monitoring that situation. He has an MRI either scheduled or they're looking or they're waiting for the results on that MRI.
No, they did an MRI. They did an MRI, and they're going to reevaluate him in 2 weeks. He's being held out of Russia's next two games in their friendly exhibition tournament. They're going in on right now.
Right. So, say what you will about the contract, and we've already spoken about the contract ad nauseum at this point. But the hope is that he can come back and be healthy, and that this isn't going to be a major thing moving forward. But you know, there is a concern here where, you know, he already has a knee thing that he's nursing. This just adds to that list of, it's just a list of one, I guess, at this point. But this is just further caution as we head into the season.
Yeah, but like you said, the contract's signed. That part of it is over. And at this point, if you're a Lakers fan and you're the Lakers organization, you just have to hope that he's going to be able to somewhat live up to that contract. It was always going to be an overpay. Everybody got overpaid this summer, but you have to hope that he's going to be able to kind of reclaim that level of play that he displayed in the Cavs' first run to the finals when they didn't win the title and they got beaten by Golden State. But he was really good that year. He was a really good player and a big part of kind of their turnaround that year. And this year, he couldn't get off the bench in the playoffs because he had a knee surgery that never healed properly. And you're hoping this summer that he was going to be able to kind of get it together and play through and kind of rest and get that all figured out. And so maybe his knee is figured out. He says it feels better in his interviews, but now he has this groin thing. And with a 7-footer, the worry is always, okay, he's like at 30. He's like, when is he going to hit that wall? and it's just everything kind of becomes, it just is injury on top of injury. It's just a cascade where the body just kind of can't support itself as much anymore. And it would be a total overreaction to say that this is the first sign that, of Mozgov's decline. It might just be a groin pull that they're being cautious about.
Yeah, the tendency with the body, though, with the human body, is that, you know, when you have an injury elsewhere on the body, you subconsciously make up for it elsewhere, and you put additional strain
to compensate.
And by putting that additional strain on there, that it might, that, you know, the knee thing might have led to the groin thing. Again, this is purely speculation. There's no way that we can know this is actually the case. But this is the type of thing that happens when a player has injury upon injury upon injury, is that the body just tries to make up for it elsewhere, and then eventually it just breaks down completely. And I don't think Mozgov is quite at that age where we have to worry about that as much, but it might be a thing. You know, this could be, I mean, this basically is foreshadowing for any aging NBA player.
Yeah, and at his size, he kind of is at that age. Like, yeah, there are a lot, like, 7-footers do tend to break down younger.
Yeah.
Like the best ones can play forever because they were so good that if they're able to get on the floor, they can still play well. But so like a lot of 7-footers careers end earlier than than wings, I would imagine, on average.
All right, so the next bit, and I'll let you introduce it because you wrote the article for Silver Screen and Roll, you know, about the injury, and then you saw the reaction a little bit more than others, and specifically about Ivica Zubac, that it kind of took me by surprise.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of kind of follow-up on Twitter, a lot of the replies to our tweets sending out news about the injury, and in the comment section, I noticed a lot of you were talking about Ivica Zubac, and this is a good thing, Mozgov's injury, because it means more playing time for Zubac. And first of all, I think that's a little misguided to think that way, because the Lakers just signed him to a 4-year deal.
Yeah.
You kind of were hoping he was going to play in, like, at least year 1 and 2 of that deal.
You want a return on that investment.
Yeah, you want something. You don't just want, like, oh, Zubac played pretty well in summer league, so we should just bench Mozgov and never play him. That seems a little bit, like, faulty logic there. But I also just don't think that Zubac is ready to play in the NBA yet on a consistent basis.
Right. And for me,
like
was surprising for me when you brought up Zubac, because in my opinion, he's still the 4th-string center. Now, it's a little technical the way I kind of look at it. Black is the immediate backup. And then I look at Randall and Nance as the small ball backup. And then, you know, from there you look at it, you know, then Zubac comes into play. Now, again, that's a technical way to look at it. I could just say he's the 3rd-string actual center, right, because of the position he plays. And there are some on Twitter who believe that he will leapfrog Black by the end of the year. But as of right now, at his age, he's still 19?
Yeah.
At his age...
Let me double check, but go ahead.
I believe that's the case. At his age, at 19, I just don't think he's ready for that type of role. And Mozgov, that's why, you know, you're hoping to get a return on the investment that is Timofey Mozgov, so that he can play and Black can play a more natural backup center role. And then Zubac can, you know, develop in that 3rd-string center where there's no pressure on him. Whereas if you force the kid to be a backup or, you know, God forbid, a starting center sooner than he's expected, he develops bad habits by just needing to catch up to the speed of NBA basketball.
Yeah, and he is 19. We can confirm that. And yeah, exactly. I agree with everything that you just said. And I just think that while he was promising in summer league, it's just very different to go against actual NBA players. And he played well. I think he's going to be a good player. I also think that he's going to need some seasoning in the D League. Our friend of the show, Pete Zayas, Laker Film Room, he did a great breakdown on Zubac's summer league play that I think that I would encourage everyone to check out. And one of the great points that he has is that Zubac only contests shots with one hand. I believe it's his right. And he really is kind of really righty dominant right now. And so he'll come across his body to block shots. And that's how you end up in foul trouble. That's going to be exacerbated playing against NBA players, much like if it was already happening in summer league. That's going to be a major issue if you're trying to stop James Harden in the first game of the year against the Houston Rockets. He's just going to have a field day at the free throw line. And just things like that, like he really can only shoot with his right hand right now. Like there's just a lot of things that he has to work on. And again, I think he's going to be good. I think the Lakers got a good player. I just think that they have to take their time with him a little bit. He's not the type of guy where last year where we were saying you just have to throw out the young guys. He's not quite ready for that yet.
Right. And I guess to play devil's advocate, he has been playing professional basketball, right? He's not he's coming from Europe, so yeah. You know, he has a little bit, you know, some experience playing against grown men that you get from playing in a professional league. But we saw it already in summer league, where when the game got, you know, more athletic, when the pace quickened, he was not ready for that. You know, he was hardly playable in those situations. And that's where, you know, the game is going. And that's the vast majority of style of play that he's going to see in the NBA. So he's just not quite ready for it. And again, this isn't Harrison and me saying that, you know, or Harrison and I saying that he's not going to be good or he'll never be ready. It's just that it's pretty rare that you have a 19-year-old ready to play significant NBA minutes. And that doesn't happen usually. And expecting him to, or hoping him to, or forcing him into a role in which he must, is not the way you want to handle the kid.
Yeah, I mean, that's a short list, and it's basically like LeBron, Karl Anthony Towns, and actually I think Magic Johnson was 20 his rookie year, but Magic could have played in the league when he was 19, we saw. So it's like those three guys. I don't think that we have Magic Zubats quite yet on our hands.
Right. So the hope is, again, that Mozgov comes back and gets himself ready to for the NBA season. And there's still plenty of time. You know,
we still have this could just be a groin pull. He could ice it and be fine in 2 weeks.
Right. So the hope is that that's all this is, and the Lakers still get return on this investment, because no matter how bad a contract might be, you can still hope for some kind of return. And that's where the Lakers are, in my opinion, with this contract. So if he can turn it around, and a groin pull generally, my wife, the doctor, is sitting next to me. Hey, Jen, how long does it usually take for a groin strain on average?
4 to 6.
She said 4 to 6 weeks. That is Dr. Jen Irwin reporting this exclusively. 4 to 6 weeks. That's plenty of time.
On the other hand, are you ready for your nihilistic comment of the week? This is a new segment I just came up with that I'm not sure how often we're going to repeat. But there was one guy in the comment section that said, this is good. It means Zubats is going to play. Like, essentially, this is what he said. This is good. Zubats is going to play more. I considered the money on Mozgov's contract dead the moment he signed it. And always thought any minutes he played was a bonus.
All right. Well, that's one way to look at stuff.
So there's also that. Just,
I'm dying, everybody.
To go back against your positive medical diagnosis from Dr. Jenner.
All right. So here's the thing. The Mozgov injury is about all the news that we have to talk about. This is going to air Monday morning. By the time that this game or this podcast will have aired, you'll have watched. You'll be up to date on Team USA basketball. And honestly, that's just way more interesting right now. So if you're not interested in hearing us talk about Team USA basketball, that's perfectly fine.
We didn't like you that much anyway.
Harrison's a little more hurt about this than I am.
Very hurt.
So go ahead and turn the podcast off. We will talk to everybody again on Wednesday, and I look forward to talking to everybody again on Wednesday, and hopefully we'll have a little bit more to talk about regarding the Lakers. But as of right now in the basketball world, Team USA is by far the most interesting conversation that you can have, because, and it's not even, It's not even that their style of play is interesting or anything that they're necessarily doing on the court is that interesting. I don't really like this team very much. And to me, the interesting aspect of this, and I'm going to set a record for saying interesting the most times in a single sentence.
Interesting.
what I can't believe is I find myself actively rooting it, you know, against them in these group stages. Now, that'll probably change in the elimination rounds. And, you know, it'll probably change as the games, you know, hold more weight. But as of right now, this team just isn't very likable. They don't play a very fun brand of basketball. They don't defend their shadow. So I guess we'll just start the conversation there. Why don't I like this team? Like, what's the why? Usually I can buy into anything American, but I can't do it.
Benedict Arnold the Irwin over here goodness. Just admitted to treason openly on this podcast. So
I'm a traitor.
you heard it here first, folks. Anthony hates the United States.
you can't see this, but I'm wearing an American LA Dodgers hat. So
yeah,
that helps. Okay.
So I think the main reason you probably don't like this team is, you know, it's like we've talked about in the past. There aren't a ton of really interesting players on this team. And when they aren't playing hard on defense, it is kind of hard to get behind them. And right. I'm using hard as much as you're using interesting. But I think, you know, today on Sunday against France, their second unit came in and I thought played pretty good defense, but the starters have just been dog crap on that end. They just aren't trying. They just like it's a lot of the stuff is like, yes, they haven't been together as long. The international teams that they're playing against have a lot more continuity. So they're going to kind of look better and more polished on offense at times. But the errors that they're making on defense half the time are just an effort thing.
Right. Do you think it's an effort thing or do you think it's a lineup thing? Like they're starting.
Well, part of Kyrie. It is lineup, but some of the stuff like Kyrie just goes to sleep.
But that's sometimes. The thing though, is that's Kyrie. Like that's Kyrie. They start Melo at the four. They start Boogie at the five. Like none of those guys have ever been noted defenders.
But Boogie is a decent defender. Boogie gets it. He's been in foul trouble though.
Well, yeah, that's what Boogie does. Boogie either fouls out of games or gets thrown out of them. Like that's what we know with Boogie.
Yeah, he was really not good on defense the last today and like the second half of last game when he was getting pulled out of the paint and he just wasn't recovering very well. And you can't really expect him to do that. But like they're getting back cut. Like when they close, a lot of the time they try to make up for kind of these open spaces that they're allowing by rushing out on guys, and it's allowing really easy drives because they're closing out too hard.
Right, and I guess my next question, and it's not really it's not going to alter the direction of the conversation, but at what point does Coach K and one, at what point does he start looking at different lineups to start with? You know, take Boogie out of the starting lineup and put DeAndre Jordan in it, who is better defensively than Boogie is. Or, you know,
I want to see Draymond Green at the five some.
Well, whatever it might be, whatever the change might be, you know, and if he doesn't make that change, at what point do we start saying like, hey, coach, your job is right there. Like this is literally your job, and you're this noted basketball Jesus.
The whole hockey subs thing has been weird. Like it kind of worked today. They were able to extend their lead with the bench coming in all at once because there are a bunch of good. They're better defenders are on the bench, but it's just I don't know. It's been kind of, but I've been a little weirded out by him just going like five in, five out. It's just. Well, like you'd think that he'd stagger these guys a little bit or experiment with different lineups, but other than flipping Paul George and Klay Thompson in and out of the starting lineup, and I think Klay showed today that he should definitely be the starter going forward into the elimination games. I wrote about that a little bit for SB Nation NBA, but I just, other than that, he hasn't done a whole lot of experimentation. Draymond Green has If he's played the five, it's been for a couple minutes at best. He really hasn't played it very much. He's been in a power forward. And I don't know. I'd like to see a little bit more kind of funkiness and just changing things up. I'm no one's advocating for Harrison Barnes to play. Okay. Like that's that change was fine
too,
today.
Get too crazy.
Huh?
I said, let's not get exactly. Too crazy.
Like he's there in case somebody gets hurt. That's fine. But like otherwise he was great in his Sacre role today. I don't know why they aren't kind of playing with these lineups a little bit more and shifting guys around.
Right. And again, I saw a couple people, you know, mention this on Twitter, and it was, you know, does Coach K, who spends all his time obviously at the college level, understand the professional style of play, let alone the European professional style of play?
I think his performance in past tournaments has been good enough that I don't know that we can go that far yet.
What's his performance like?
I mean, he had better players, so that's a fine. But he hasn't lost them any games or anything, so I don't know. It's just hard for me to question that he understands international play. I think I don't know. He just does make some weird decisions sometimes.
And again, you know, anybody who knows who I root for in college, I am a Tar Heel fan. That isn't painting this at all. Does that mean I'm not
like Coach K's hair?
It's not that I'm not enjoying the speculation as to whether or not Coach K is actually basketball Jesus. Like that's I'm having fun with that. But just in general, he feels to me like a coach who, you know, at the end of every, you know, rec league season, you have an all-star team put together of, you know, like two or three players taken from every team in the division. And then he gets the team together. He figures out lineups, and then it just changes quarter by quarter who plays which. And those all-star, you know, tournament little things are never very interesting to watch or fun to play because you never really get any kind of rhythm. The teams never play up to their actual capability because of the politics that go into, well, we brought so-and-so from so, you know, and so-and-so played, you know, this and this well for whichever team he's coming from. We should probably try to find ways to get that person in the game. And that's what I'm watching right now with Team USA is that, well, Kevin Durant is here and he's really good. We can't bench him for being lackadaisical down the stretches of these games. Right, he has to be in at the end of all these games, even though his play down the stretches or in clutch moments of this game isn't indicative of somebody who deserves to be out there no matter what.
He hasn't been assertive enough about coming and getting the ball. He was really good in the first half today. He had 13 points in the first half. Him and Thompson both had 13 points in the first half. Thompson finished with 30. Durant finished with 17, and he. Like one of them was that great lob from Kyrie as Kyrie was falling down. That was like
that was probably
the play of the Olympics so far. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me. I tweeted this out. It reminded me of that pass that Wade had to Kobe back in.
Yeah,
was it 08 or whatever? Yeah.
It kind of was the new generation version of that.
Yeah,
but. He hasn't been. He's been really good when he's shot for the most part. He was shooting 80% over the first two games as a whole, and he was really good. And then they just kind of went away from him, and he hasn't come back from it. I want the lineup that I'm kind of interested in seeing is the starters, but swap Cousins out at the five and for Draymond Green. Because if this team's not going to play defense, they need to outscore everyone. And I think that that's their best chance to do that.
Yeah, it looks really congested, like more congested even than usual. I was one thing I noticed today in passing was how few three-pointers come off of interior touches, whether it's from guards penetrating and kicking out or interior passes to the bigs and then kicking out to shooters. And it makes a big difference for a shooter because If it's a passing, you know, if the ball's just rotating around the perimeter, the shooter catches the ball with his shoulders squared to the opposite basket more than to the basket he's shooting at. And if it's a pass coming from the interior, that shooter's shoulders are already squared. And for somebody like Klay Thompson, it doesn't really matter as much because he has such a quick release. And he's, you know, one of the one or two best shooters that we've ever seen in the NBA, right? Yeah. But for somebody like, you know, Paul George, or for somebody like Carmelo Anthony, or for somebody like DeMar DeRozan, who are not Klay Thompson, they need all the help they can possibly get to get some kind of rhythm in, you know, in a tournament that, like, DeMar DeRozan is completely lost out there.
Yeah, I don't really feel like I need to see any more of DeMar DeRozan.
No, and that's the thing, again, is that, like, DeMar DeRozan is some, you know, he just got his big contract thing, and the politics of basketball come into play here, right, where we can't just out-and-out bench DeMar DeRozan because, you know, we asked for him to come here. He's spending his summer representing his country.
I think they will, if it comes down to elimination time, I think that they're going to be a little less hesitant to sit guys down.
And we can only hope, right? And we're already seeing it with Harrison Barnes, right? Who I think has two or three DNP CDs in a row.
No. I think he's played the last.
Oh, no. Who did I say? I meant Harrison Barnes.
Yeah, Harrison Barnes. He didn't play today, but I think.
And I don't think he played yesterday either.
Last game?
No.
Okay. I'd have to check that. But
yeah.
I mean, if he did play, it was a minuscule amount, and right. He didn't really make much of an impact to be, to speak about.
Right. So again, this all changes as we go into elimination and, you know, the stakes get higher. And just like with my rooting tendency, it's going to change as soon as, you know, the game actually
You're not matters. The only one. I've actually, there have been multiple people, Americans, that have told me that they're rooting against Team USA because it's impossible not to root for the underdog. And, you know, when you're watching these other teams and kind of the flair and chemistry that they play with, it is kind of hard not to root for those guys.
Right. And you know, that's a good way to put it. The way you put it is better than, you know, me just out and out saying, I don't like this team, is when, you know, I find myself rooting for the underdog, right? But, you know, I guess I take that a step further and I say that not only am I rooting for the underdog, but like had Team USA lost a game in these group stages, right? They had back-to-back 3-point wins over the last two games. If one of those two games goes differently, the impetus for change is much stronger, right? And that's where, you know, as I'm watching, I'm saying, yeah, it'd be nice to see this team get actually kicked in the teeth. Not actually. Don't. I'm not condoning violence.
Draymond's ears just perked up somewhere in Rio.
I said teeth, Draymond. I said teeth. But with this team, I'm watching them play, and it's like, yeah, I wouldn't mind some actual adversity. Like, I think the Golden State Warriors next year, not to mention the whole Kevin Durant angle to this, but the Golden State Warriors next year are a lot more interesting going into the season because they've actually undergone some adversity. They've lost in the finals. Whereas if we see them going for just a three-peat, that's the story, and really it's not that drawing of a story.
Yeah.
And with this
team, like, oh, the best team in basketball added the best free agent. Awesome.
Yeah, great. Woo. And with Team USA, that's the same kind of thing. Is the best team in this tournament just keeps winning. Okay, where's the story?
Yeah.
And we try to manifest the story. We try to say how, you know, they need to play better defense, or is chemistry
that's
an issue,
not really
or
manifested.
Whatever.
I mean, they need to play better defense. They've been lucky to win these last three games.
Yeah, I mean,
they've had some lucky breaks go their way.
It's hard for me to say a team with this level of talent is lucky to win any game.
They were lucky to win against Serbia. That like,
oh yeah, two open
that
wide
last
open threes.
Play, if you leave Bojan Bogdanovic wide open, like it's amazing that he didn't make that.
Right, and you know it'll be I. You said the lineup that you'd be interested to see. So who is your ideal lineup? And we'll end on this, and we'll get us to Wednesday.
I think for me, it's the starters. So with Thompson in the starting unit. So Kyrie, Thompson,
Durant,
Durant, Melo, and Green.
Okay.
So basically the death lineup, but swapping Iguodala for Melo and Steph for Kyrie.
So I would say I like that lineup. I would probably
I'll say it again. I don't know that they have the time or really the ability to clean up their defense on a consistent level in the elimination game. So I think they just have to outscore teams.
Right. Yeah, and that's one way to look at it. I guess for me, I'm just always interested in these like amoeba type lineups where everybody switches everything and you know there aren't very specific roles offensively. So I guess I would enjoy watching a team with I would take out Kyrie, and I don't think Lowry's that good to where you have to have a point guard on the court. So I'd probably go like Paul George at the one, Clay at the two, Durant at the three, Melo at the four, and then Draymond at the five. And then you just go out there, you pressure everything, you switch everything, you get up and down the court as much as you possibly can, and you hope to open up the court simply through pace and through defensive pressure.
That's interesting. I think they could definitely play that lineup in spurts because you could have George or Melo or Durant be kind mm-hmm. of point forward to a degree,
yeah,
and kind of get the ball up that way. It'd just be interesting to see how they were able to set up their lineups with that, their sets with that. Although it may not matter because with a lineup like that, they may be getting enough steals that they're just getting out in transition and getting exactly. their offense that way.
That's the thinking there, and that's kind of the success that the Lakers had in summer league, you know. And we'll bring this conversation full circle, but the Lakers, you know, when they looked at their best defensively, they were just suffocating out there in Vegas because they were so much longer and they were so much more athletic than everybody. And, you know, passing lanes closed up really quickly. Zubats is a different, you know, defensive center than Draymond Green would be. You know, Zubats was more of
the least.
Literally. I mean, nowadays everybody's getting called Draymond Green. So Zubats, yeah. Are you Draymond?
Yeah. So Zubats is not just shameless plug. I do have an article on why I think it's dumb to compare everyone to Draymond Green, and it's kind of looking at it through the lens of Julius Randle right. on Silver Screen and Roll that people can check out.
I didn't read that one yet.
Rude. Oh, that was hurtful. I was all excited. I'm like, wow, you finally read something I wrote. Thanks, Anthony. Oh, no, never mind.
I'm sorry. Okay. I couldn't help it. I dream on green to you there. But
yeah, a little bit.
So, yeah, it's just I'd like to see that lineup out there, like you say, in spurts, just to get out, just try something different, because whatever they're using right now, they're winning, yes, but it's not very fun to watch. It hasn't, you know, and it's probably too late to trot out a lineup like that because you're in elimination play. And if that lineup doesn't work, then you're, you know, down for the first stretches of any moment that they've been in the Olympics. So I don't think we'll see that lineup, but boy, would that be so much fun. Just defensively, it'd be ridiculous.
And teams, to just one more point, teams have been good about fouling them to keep them out of transition or just taking shot clock violations if they're overpatient rather than kind of like force a pass or force a long shot. Like, they've been pretty good about using strategies to keep the U.S. out of transition as best they can.
All right, so what rule change? We'll end on this, and then again, Wednesday we'll talk more about the Lakers. For me, I have two rule changes that I'd like to see in the NBA and then in basketball general I'm springing this on you, so I'll let you go second.
I already have one.
Really? Okay, you go ahead.
Yeah. Turn fouls off. No, I'm just kidding. shout out to NBA 2001, NBA Live 2001. That was my strategy. This is probably what you're going to say, but I would like to see the FIBA offensive goaltending rules implemented where the ball is live when it's on the rim.
Mm-hmm. That was one of them that I would like the NBA to take in. For me, it's in basketball in general, and it's in soccer, if you get fouled and you definitely have you know, momentum carrying you forward that it looks like you're going to score anyway, regardless, even despite the foul. They just keep on letting play continue. And at the end of the day, sports are entertainment, right? And there is nothing, there is no greater ugh moment than yes. when you have this, you know, 2-on-1 or breakaways. You know, do you have these incredible athletes that are getting into the open court and they're going to do something incredible, and then ugh, they took a foul.
Pablo Prigioni took a foul.
Yeah, exactly. So if I were basketball, I would bring in the advantage.
In soccer
it's called advantage. I would bring in the advantage rule. And not only would I bring in the advantage rule, but if you commit that kind of foul, you have to sit for like a month.
Devil's advocate, I do worry about putting more judgment calls on the refs. They have so much on their plate already that would be my one concern with that.
But like even there though, I'd like to see what, you know, because then you're going from a situation, a fast break situation, that fast break, I'd like the average scoring in a fast break setting is probably pretty high, right? Probably dang near, you know, 1.5 to 1.6 points per possession, if not more, you know.
We'll bring on someone who's good at math for that, for a follow-up to this.
But and then you go from that to a situation where the average points per possession is probably below one. Right?
Yeah, sure.
And you're just talking about limiting, you know, if I were a team and I saw that the referee didn't play there.
Bring it to a free throw?
What?
A free throw is well above a point per possession.
No, I'm talking
about... talking about just an intentional foul and then bringing it into the half court offense.
Right, yeah. So the half court offense doesn't score, obviously. This isn't groundbreaking analysis.
It depends on your team. It can score a little over a point per possession, but yeah.
Byron is like, dude, we had a great game. We scored 0.1 points per possession. That was amazing. But sorry, Byron. But if you're going into, and I don't want to get too deep into math, but basically, if I were a coach and I saw that they didn't call, you know, if they called advantage in that setting, especially in basketball. In soccer, it's a little bit more iffy because goals are so rare and hard to come by that sometimes you just want the set piece regardless. Yeah. But in basketball, because how dominant the offense becomes in transition, if I were a coach and they called advantage, I honestly wouldn't have that big an issue with it. And the nice thing about advantage is as soon as the play stops in soccer, they can always just say like, all right, bring the play back to here. They actually didn't gain from the advantage that they had back there. And then you can call a late whistle. Late whistles happen all the time in the NBA anyway, so it wouldn't be that, you know, astronomically different.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. This was a lot of fun. Let us know what you think about the Team USA talk, because we are getting into the elimination games and we are getting in, you know, we are out of group play. And again, it's actual basketball. It's fun to talk about actual basketball. And yeah. I would imagine it's a lot more fun to listen to us talk about actual basketball than try to figure out, you know, the top five moments of Kobe's career, which will be Wednesday. But let us know what you think about that. Again, you can find us on iTunes, on Audio Boom, on Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, and Stitcher. I am at Anthony Irwin LA. That is at HM Fagan. We are Locked On Lakers, and thanks everybody for listening.
All right. Thanks, Anthony.